You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And Sam Claiborne.
Hey, cheers, everybody.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about the mess that has been the GTA Trilogy Definitive Edition launch. Got a 5 from IGN. I don't know how this happened. But on the better, happier news, Halo Infinite's multiplayer has surprise launched this week, so that was a very cool thing.
Yay.
But first, I'm back on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Did you figure it out?
Yes, it was not a bug. It was some helpful member of Scoop Nation. It was a user error. Helpful member of Scoop Nation point out the platform I was trying to get Groot to lift is not where I needed to be at that moment. Somewhere else, there was one of those really narrow passageways that I was supposed to shuffle through that I just missed.
Like, yeah, sometimes those are really, really tough.
Yeah.
Was this in the waterfall area?
It's when Mantis is on Drax's back and you're trying to help out Drax. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also the first moment that you can signal to Groot to pull his move off. So it's the first moment they're introducing it to you. And I stumbled with it, and I saw somebody from Scoop Nation mentioned, like, oh, you have to scan it with your visor, and then Groot can actually activate his assistance. So yeah, it's like that first time. Yeah, it's a little confusing because you don't have to do that with anybody else's abilities either, like the puzzle abilities.
So, you know, I completed that section, if you remember it, and I still like the game a lot and I'm enjoying it, but am I alone in thinking that it just kind of drags on forever? I still haven't finished it, and I'm like, man, I'm like,
is the story not getting to you?
What do you mean? I like everything well enough. It's just like, I feel like I've been playing the game for a long time, and there's other games I want to play, so I'm like, okay, Guardians, can we wrap all this up now?
Well, that might also be the end of year pressure of 1,000 other games, everybody talking and nominating them. Yeah, and you're like, ooh, true. I really need to play Inscription, which is good. And you should play it. Like, you specifically, Damon, should play it.
Yeah, I was just looking that up, but I think it's only on PC.
Right now, so yeah, I know. It would be so good on Switch and even mobile, honestly, at least like the first half of that game.
It's a card game, right?
Well,
Yeah. It's a card game.
I'm just wondering if my iMac can like run it. Like, if it's a card, like my iMac could do Slay the Spire, no problem. You know. So
the game has secrets.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. That's why it is.
Got it.
A card game.
I just, I,
It was under our strategy category. So I didn't know if it was like Civilization, I probably couldn't run it. You know. Mm. Anyway, Guardians is very good, even though I hope to finish it soon. And I think the writing gets better and funnier later in the game after they've stopped arguing and they're all working together as a team.
Yep.
And there are several moments that I've laughed out loud just playing by myself. And that doesn't happen very often when I'm playing.
Yep. Yeah, that's the best thing about Guardians.
So that's great. And the less great side of things, there's this GTA Trilogy Definitive Edition, which I mentioned ended up getting a 5 from IGN. I just can't understand what could possibly have happened. These are three of the most influential, important, successful, popular, and beloved games of all time. I don't know. How could Rockstar mess this up so badly?
I know. Remains to be seen. Like, we haven't heard word from them quite yet. I have to imagine we are going to be hearing from them any second now. Surely there will be patches and at least some sort of an explanation at some point. But yeah, like, people have been gathering all sorts of evidence, and I'm sure, like, I haven't had a chance to play yet. So I'm really curious, like, what playing an actual, like, succession of the different games, like, how visible a lot of these issues are or how common they are. Because when you see it all across Reddit or Twitter, it certainly seems like it's just a disaster zone.
Do you see the bug about the wiggling car?
Yes, I was laughing so hard.
That's my favorite one.
Bigger when you wiggle. It's so crazy.
If anyone hasn't seen that, I think it's in GTA 3 and in San Andreas. There's a bug. I don't know if it's with just certain cars or every car, but I've seen the video footage of it. They're driving down the road, wiggling their car back and forth, and very slowly it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger until it's like bigger than the road. It's so funny.
Like, what is it? Like, I'm not a programmer, but I understand how certain bugs happen. Like, oh, there's like collision detection or like weird physics. But like, what? Like, what's going on under the hood to make the car get bigger?
I don't know. It's like, it's kind of like a similar to the Cyberpunk situation last year, and just that this was a very high profile anticipated release from a very prestigious developer that is known for quality that they kind of didn't give people a lot of looks at before release. And I don't think we got review code ahead of release. And yeah, they turned out to be in really rough shape.
Like, why? Like, that's the exact thing. It's like, why did it have to come out right now? Mm-hmm. Like, Rockstar took GTA 5 came out 45 years ago and they still haven't made GTA 6. They take as long as they want. And yet for some reason, this is like, no, you can't see it ahead of time. And it's clearly seeming deliberate at this point. It's like, just wait. Just wait till it's ready.
Yeah.
And there's still like, it's coming to mobile platforms sometime next year too. So there's still a couple other platform additions to come on this one. But I wonder if those are going to get delayed for fixes on the console versions for now.
Yeah, I hope so.
I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy. I was really excited to play Vice City again. I haven't played any of these games since release, but like, it was like, as I was about to hit the purchase button, all of this started blowing up last Friday, I think. And I was like, whoa, hold on. Wait a minute now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of speculation too, that because it's not, Rockstar North in particular, it's actually the same devs that worked on their mobile ports. So there's speculation about like, oh, clearly they just use the mobile ports, which I don't think that's the case. I think like clearly something went awry, like clearly they did not want to ship it in this way. Like, so something must have happened in the development process. We know that they developed it over the course of 2 years and, through some interviews that are out there. There's only like two interviews about the process of them developing on the Definitive Edition. They mentioned like, oh, you know, we kind of didn't anticipate like the level of work that would need to go into like XYZ elements of this reboot. And I don't know, maybe they needed more than the 2 years or something went dramatically awry in the process.
Yeah.
But we can only speculate.
So a big question I have is, you know, obviously GTA 5, the most successful entertainment thing ever released. The Red Dead Redemption 2, also very successful, beloved by a lot of people, even though some people have like mixed feelings about that game. But my question is, like, GTA 6 is somewhere on the horizon. Has this release been damaging to Rockstar's reputation?
No.
I think okay. only in the sense of, because a lot of the commentary I've seen is like, oh, this was clearly just a cash grab. So I think yeah. it's been, you know, maybe a sentiment hit in that sense, but I don't think an expectation hit, if that makes sense. So like, you know, if and when Red Dead 3 and GTA 6 are a thing, I think people are going to, and they see like, you know, the specific studios behind those games are their original studios. I think people are still going to have faith that they'll be able to pull those off with the level of quality we expect from Rockstar. The criticism that I've seen as far as the definitive edition goes was mostly like, clearly this was like a cash grab, like a company right. level decision. So that seems to be where their reputation has a bit of a feedback from the community.
That's definitely different than CD Projekt, right? Because a lot of ill will was generated by CD Projekt. But I'd like to also compare it to Nintendo, which completely gets out of everything that they do that pisses people off. And they just piss people off with their emulation of Nintendo 64 games and their subscription prices. Like, nobody's boycotting Nintendo right now.
Yeah.
I also wanted to point out the very funny similarity between the Nintendo 64 resurrections and this situation. When we improve old games, now there's this tendency to smooth corners, to take away fog, and those two things are really funny. In both instances, the fog one, for example, they took out the fog, which, you know, used to obscure, I suppose, you know, malformed textures in the distance on Nintendo 64, but it also is used as fog, so it looked cool. And you'd be like, you know, in the famous video that went around was of Link fighting himself in the water temple in Ocarina of Time, and it's like, there's no fog there, it just looks kind of ridiculous. Well, Grand Theft Auto, they took away the fog and added draw distance, and like, those are like things that only contemporary tech can do, right? Really cool to see it. You fly away from the island or wherever you are, the map, it looks like this little toy diorama with zero you know, weather effects or anything. You can see like everything miniaturized perfectly, and it's just you never got to see Grand Theft Auto that way, and I think it's adorable, and I don't think it's a problem, but also, I mean, I guess it's a problem in the sense that, like, hey, like, you know, atmosphere doesn't look that way when you back out, and so we need to fix that stuff. But it is funny to see these old games get corrections that shouldn't be corrections.
Yeah, that was really funny. I don't know. I just think the whole situation is a real shame, especially since the previous re-releases of these games that were on sale were already good, but now they've been removed from sale. So now this trilogy is currently the only way to buy and play these games on modern systems today. So,
and you still can't play, like, they took it off Steam, and you can't play this on Steam. You have to use that Rockstar launcher, which had issues, which is, I think, is like kind of silly too. You know, like, those are big install bases there, and we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, that's a lot of the other side of the criticism as well. Like, you know, what does this say for game preservation, particularly if these are the alternatives that are available? So I think that's another, you know, if we're talking about Rockstar sentiment, I think that's another thing that people really were drawn to as far as a big piece of criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's just rubbing salt in the wound that, like, they released this, like, broken, buggy thing. And then they took the old one. Like, you can't buy it anymore.
I know.
And that's so, and I know they didn't, like, mean it to be so rude, but, like, that becomes what the narrative is, right? It's just such a rude thumb in the eye of, like, your fans of, like, you can't buy the thing that works. You can only buy the broken thing.
We have an email about the GTA trilogy from Will Ard, who says, with the classic 3D GTAs stumbling to modern systems, I've been thinking about the term definitive edition used for many re-releases and remasters. It's had me wondering what comes after the definitive edition. I imagine my PS5 won't be the final system I play games on. Graphics and CPUs will continue to change and improve through the years. So why are these versions labeled as definitive? Optionally, what makes a version of a game definitive to you? I wish video games adopted the reissue convention of books, first edition, second edition, etc., instead of definitive edition. I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah.
But in your mind, the world is going to end potentially in the next 6 to 12 months, so that's why it's the definitive edition. That's the answer, right?
That's what makes it definitive
to me. What's Justin's answer?
What comes after it is anniversary edition, if you're talking about Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had a definitive edition and then had a more definitive edition.
The special edition.
Yeah, and then after that, you get director's cut. And then after that, you get Snyder cut.
Yeah, they'll do GTA the Snyder cut.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good point. I do kind of like the idea of the book convention, the first edition. I don't know what this would make these GTA is the third or fourth edition of these games. Mm-hmm.
The Lord of the Rings illustrated edition just came out, and it's very pretty, single bound volume with, like, you know, 20 drawings from Tolkien in it. And so, you know, the books do this all the time.
Yeah.
There's off the top of my head, Resident Evil is a game that's been remade twice now.
GameCube.
Well, kind of. So there was Resident Evil. I mean, you know, there's a million. There's a director's cut back in the day. True, yeah. That was BS. But game's been fully remade twice.
What was the second time?
On GameCube.
What was the first?
So there's Resident Evil, like just on the PlayStation, and the GameCube Resident Evil remake, and then they remade it again, you know, whenever, last year, 2 years ago.
No, they haven't done one yet.
Yeah, not the first
one. They've done two.
They skipped one and did two.
Yeah. Two and three.
That'd be awesome.
Two and three. Mm-hmm. I wonder if those games, I know, like, so maybe Pokemon is a game that's been remade. The original Pokemon.
I mean, you already nailed it. Skyrim is the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, so there was Pokemon, then there was Fire Red and Leaf Green, and then there was, didn't they remake Gen 1 again?
Yes, as Let's Go. Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
Mm-hmm. So there's probably, like, I bet we could make a short list of games that have already gone through, like, a multiple reboot cycle.
Mm-hmm.
We just did.
Plus, like, these could have legit remakes one day, right? And then they're, like, really fancy remakes like those.
Like Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Darksiders 2 had a Deathinitive edition.
Oh, boy. Right.
And then I think it was Red Faction. One of the Red Faction had a remastered edition. <Yep. clears
throat> Because it takes place on Mars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What if it took place on a different planet? What would they have done then?
I don't know. You gotta brainstorm some puns.
This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop.
Okay, this week, Xbox celebrated its 20th anniversary, and as part of that celebration, they surprise launched the multiplayer portion of Halo Infinite, although it wasn't too much of a surprise, because a lot of that speculation leaked out last week. It would have been really cool if it actually were a surprise, but still really cool to have happen. I know, like, other people on this show, like Sam and Justin, are a little bit more bigger Halo heads than I am. Has anyone tried it out?
Yeah, I downloaded it last night and played all night long. The only reason I waited that long is because I was away from home. I wasn't home, and so, like, literally, I came home from the airport and like started it downloading so that by the time I was, it would be like ready to go by the time I was ready for it.
Nice.
It's awesome. Like, I think it's perfect. I think it's perfect. Like, people have their complaints about the battle pass, but I don't care about that because I played, you know, 3,000 matches of Halo 2 before, you know, anyone had ever heard of battle passes.
Yeah.
I think Bungie and then 343, and I've probably talked about this on the show before, were like, Halo, anytime they changed anything, people hated it. And so they were really kind of sandwiched between, you know, the smallest changes to the battle rifle or to character movement or whatever, and the community's furious. But then they're also furious about the game not changing and the game being the same. And so they were kind of stuck in a little bit of a tight spot. And I think 343 with Halo Infinite, they've really pulled off a magic trick and threaded the needle by modernizing and speeding up the overall movement and the pace of play. But they still kept like time to kill really high. And so things like positioning and team play and weapon selection, like all that stuff still feels like Halo. So they managed to keep it feeling the same, but still modernizing it at the same time. Like I said, it feels like a magic trick. I don't know how they pulled it off, but they totally did. I'm playing on 120 FPS on my, you know, LG, you know, OLED TV. Like, it's incredible. Like, if I were reviewing the multiplayer, I would give it a 10 out of 10 I did play for several hours, but only over the course of one evening's play.
Right. I mean, it's like, that's so like glowing and enthusiastic, and it's free. It's like, what? It's crazy.
I know. I was just going to mention that. It's like, so crazy that it's free to play and early.
Yeah, I am hearing lots of really, really good things. Sam, how about you?
Well, we'll talk about earning goodwill from a community. Yeah. It released something for free and early. Mm-hmm. That never happens. It's usually more expensive and late. and it doesn't even have to be good. And apparently this is really good. I don't know. I think my time is really past for playing Halo online. Although that's probably the most online shooter series I've ever played. I've played so much of it. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
A crew to play with or anything. But I'd really like to play a single player right now. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. I am looking forward to the single player. I'm hearing good things about that as well.
The main criticism is around the battle pass and the character progression, which I don't care about for a couple different reasons. One, what you get is like I leveled up my battle pass and I got like a new thing to like bolt onto my forehead. I'm like, who cares about this stuff, man? like, I don't, and like, I'm being a little bit mean because I know a huge amount of people care about customizing their Spartan, but like, that's not something that's important to me, right? Like, I don't care about getting new shoulder pads and new junk for my Spartan. But the more like legitimate complaint is the way they structure their battle pass is you can play a really hard fought match. It goes into overtime. It's this crazy back and forth, and then you can get nothing for it. Mm. Absolutely no progression to your battle pass because you only level up and earn XP when you complete challenges, and the challenges get really hard and esoteric. Like you only have three challenges, and one of my challenges is right now is destroy a Banshee in a multiplayer match, and like half the maps don't have Banshees on them.
Yeah. Good.
And like, or it's like, so I have two challenges that I can't complete. Well, you know, I can eventually, but like, one is destroy a Banshee, and the other one is get a kill with a Mauler, which I have never found that weapon on a map. Like I haven't found one yet. And so it's like, that's two of my three challenge slots are just stuck. And so from a moment to moment gameplay perspective, like I literally don't think there's anything I would change, but sort of the meta systems that underpin it all, if someone needs that to be motivated to play, it's not enough for them to just kind of have a good time. Like, you're probably a little bit disappointed with the state of Infinite's multiplayer at the moment, but goodness gracious, it feels good to play.
Well, so just real quick, they actually today announced a couple changes to the Battle Pass system. So it sounds like, because I haven't played yet, I've been busy playing some like end of year catch-up games. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely my weekend plan. But from what I understand, they've like increased how many opportunities you get for earning XP, how much XP you get. So it sounds like they've addressed it.
The changes are still pretty ticky-tacky, but they were what they really did is they opened the door to like, this is the beginning of the dialogue with our player base. So it's like you get a pittance of XP after every match now is basically the change that they made.
Yeah. But so then from our real quick, just for context from our news story, the Halo support, I'm reading from our news story, the Halo support Twitter feed made the announcement saying that players now earn 50 XP towards their battle pass with every match made game played. So that's what you were just talking about. The deck of challenges is also being, quote, updated to serve players of all skill levels. As promised, XP boosts now last for an hour, and weekly challenge progression has been reset with players being given this week's ultimate reward next week. And then four challenges that saw bugs have also now been fixed.
Yeah, they the XP boosts being time-based. So the way that it works is you get challenges that you have to complete in that multiplayer map, and then after the match is over, you get the XP for them. So it has nothing to do with whether the map was 5 minutes or 20 minutes to play. And but the XP boosts weren't for a set amount of matches. They were for a set amount of time. And so that just felt bad if you were playing longer, like if you were playing big team battle where the maps take way, way longer to complete. And so the battle pass needs reworking. It's good that they're listening to players. It's still not in a great state.
Well, even though Xbox released the Halo Infinite multiplayer this week, they're still calling it a beta, apparently. And we have a question about that from Big Tony Style.
Hey!
Who says, with the surprise launch of Halo's multiplayer beta access this week, I'm curious, what is the true definition of beta access, and why do companies use this instead of demo? Just seems to be a loose term that gets thrown around for no particular reason. I'm still playing Hearthstone's beta of Battlegrounds pretty much daily for quite a while, even though that's still listed as a beta. Same, Big Tony Style. Battlegrounds has been one of my favorite new modes in Hearthstone. Anyway, am I correct that a demo is considered a demonstration of the final product, and a beta means it gives them more wiggle room to say, like, oh, it's not quite finished yet. We're still tinkering with it.
A little bit. A demo is like a slice of a game. We haven't really seen a proper demo in a long time. Or like they used to be more popular, more regular, where you get like a slice of a campaign, like even a single player game. So yeah, it's beta and like early access, like stuff like that is a little bit more interchangeable, where it does give them the leeway. And it's a little bit of like marketing and messaging where you get to say, like, you know, we haven't quite launched yet. We're getting some feedback from the community, which is exactly what's happening with Halo Infinite right now, as they make assessments. And then on like proper launch date, that should be more representative of the experience as they see it. So for Halo Infinite in particular, they mentioned that, you know, they had their technical preview, and that was really helpful for them to make a different judgments, advancements, improvements to the game. So now this is kind of taking it like that next step forward and stress testing it on a wider scale. So it is the complete multiplayer experience. It's just that they're going to be doing a whole lot of balancing. And, you know, that's the way that they communicate to players, like, don't worry, things are going to be changing.
Mm-hmm. Well, except, and again, I hate to kind of be the naysayer given how much I absolutely love the multiplayer, but I would push back on that narrative somewhat, because the cash store is open. Like, you can buy $90 worth of Halo credits and spend it on cosmetics and a bunch of junk in your profile. So nothing changes between now and December 8th or whenever they remove that beta label. They're already in season one of the Battle Pass. It's not like a preseason. They're already charging money. It's the game. It's the whole game. I think it gives them a little bit of cover.
Yeah.
Should something go sideways or not be working. But I don't think there is any real difference in practice.
No, it's just that they're giving themselves room to make the improvements and saying that, like, this is a stage at which we're like rapidly making changes. I think that messaging still stands.
I think that the overall concept of a beta from when it was first starting was when I first started to hear that word, is that, like, they, you know, that's specifically when you're collecting data and improving or working on a game still. And it's interesting, like, just to compare that to a demo, which is like, hey, this is out there and it's done. And like, I'm kind of interested, like, do they look at people's demo play? And like, is there a way to get data from demos? Like, the most recent demo that made a splash in any way was that Nintendo released a Metroid Dread demo after Metroid Dread was out.
Yeah.
Weird. And like, people were, you know, kind of excited about that. It's just crazy. But Nintendo hasn't done that for a long time. And back in the day, like, Nintendo didn't do demos in general a lot either, because, like, you know, Xbox 360 had a whole ecosystem for demos because you downloaded them and you'd play them ahead of time, and Nintendo was really reluctant to do downloadable games. But yeah, so that was always like my understanding, is that they're like, you know, the beta is like some kind of like developer moment where they're like, okay, a small group of people, let's see if our servers work, and then they take a bunch of data and like put it back. that's it's used for so many other things now. It's just used for all kinds of stuff. And man, there's no term like early access. That is just BS. It's just like, you know, this is a game. Give us some slack, but this game's out.
Yeah, it's out, and we're charging money for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do think.
Yeah, well, sorry, but there are different flavors of early access where, like, you're going to be deeply involved in the development process, and like, hey, it's out there. Let us know. Like, we'll change it. Versus early access, more as a marketing tool. Like, they sort of run the gamut. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my point about betas. Is like, there's a differentiation between like, this is what we have decided the balance of the game is going to be, versus like, we're keeping an open mind to multiplayer experiences being contingent on how people discover bugs and glitches and manipulate the systems. And, you know, Back 4 Blood is still, obviously they're still making changes and patches to balancing it, because there was the initial problem of they were spawning too many special infected, which was absolutely a thing I experienced. And I was like, holy hell, this is really difficult, but they're still working on balancing there. So it's certainly like the final product. I think there's like just an area where people are communicating, we're willing to make these changes, versus people who don't feel the need to make that kind of assessment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's no Firefight, there's no Forge, like all that stuff is to come. And right. Presumably season 2, season 3 of Halo Infinite, like, you know, they're soft signaling, or not so softly, that like, it's going to be an active development, you know, for years, you mm-hmm. know, forever, which is cool. And you know, there's not a lot of maps, so stuff like that, like a lot more to come, I think.
Man, Halo is one of the earliest experiences I ever had with doing like, you know, closed beta mm-hmm. when they had it as like, you know, a part of like pre-ordering or getting some kind of other game, or what, I think it was a pre-order with Gears of War or something. I don't know. There was like some way to play the Halo 3 beta, and I was obsessed with that. It was like two maps. Crackdown. There you go. Yeah. Like two maps. You got to play it like, you know, a ton. It was like up for like 30 days or something. It was really cool.
Real quick, regarding
Crackdown was great too.
Regarding demos, I think demos are actually fairly common on the Nintendo Switch, because in the eShop, there's a whole section of for games with demos.
Games with demos.
Mm. True. Good shout.
Nintendo's so funny. Should we release a Metroid demo before the game comes out? Nope. Please wait until it's been out for a couple weeks and then put the demo out.
Yeah.
It's not ready yet.
Got it. Cool.
The demo is in beta. Also, what happened, some news this week, Saints Row, the new Saints Row has been delayed out of February 2022 all the way back to August. And this is a game that was just announced fairly recently back at Gamescom. So just a couple months ago, I guess. But it was, of course, met with mixed reaction from Saints Row fans. Not everyone
yes.
loved the look and feel of this new Saints Row, this reboot.
Oh, really?
Yes. You can't tell if you're being sarcastic, Justin.
No, I didn't know there was discourse around this.
It's a heavily downvoted trailer. This
Got
one.
It.
But yeah, this is supposed to be out in February. Now it's been pushed back to August. I'm a big, I like Saints. Well, I guess I wouldn't say I'm a big Saints Row fan. I'm a big fan of Saints Row the Third specifically. Mm-hmm. So I welcome a new game that's as fun as that, if that's what this ends up being. But now we have to wait until August. So what does that leave us to play in February? Well, not to worry. In February, we're still getting Elden Ring and Horizon Forbidden West and Dying Light 2. And then a bunch of other smaller, lower profile games. But so all those big games are coming in February.
But Midnight Suns and Saints Row have been moved out of that very exciting February now.
Well, I think Midnight Suns just had a spring release window, but that has also been moved back to the later half of 2022.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting because in the news announcement about the delay, they'd actually said, like, you know, this is a quote, rest assured there will not be any changes to the story or the characters or anything that we've lovingly imagined over the last few years and already shared with you, which, like, A, we haven't actually seen a ton. The game was revealed at Gamescom this year, which was just August.
Yeah.
It's probably why you haven't seen a ton of it, Justin. But like, the other element too is like, I think those were these specific things that people didn't like from the early showing. Yeah, I know. So I thought that was an interesting take.
Yeah. That's a good point. So,
Yeah, I saw some people speculating like, oh, clearly they're going to reboot all of that. I'm like, no, according to that quote, it sounds like, because they mentioned that it's all polish right now, that it wasn't up to their standards if they were going to release in February, which fair enough. You know, I never have a problem with developers delaying things so that you don't get a Cyberpunk or a GTA trilogy kind of a situation that they fall into sometimes. But it sounds like that's their main focus, is just the polish and not really anything to the identity of this new chapter.
I guess it's one tactic for dealing with a backlash, right? I guess it's like one way is to be like, you know, we have a lot of passionate fans. We've heard your feedback. We've listened and we've taken a lot of that feedback into account and made some adjustments to the game. But they're just being like, rest assured, everything that you're complaining about is not being changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right.
They had an interesting PR problem of they're delaying the game, but not for the reason the fan base wanted. Exactly. And so they have to kind of signal that to people. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I didn't like, I saw, you know, this footage we're watching now, and I picked up on that on Gamescom. I just didn't know that people were all mad about it.
Yeah. I don't, in my
I
mind,
think it just looks different.
It
just looks different. Yeah. It's not quite like the Saints Row vibe. I saw a lot of people comparing it to Fortnite, you know, seeing, and then I think the association with Fortnite comes into play, and that becomes part of like the feedback baggage that people are latching onto. So, you know, it's always difficult for us to tell from trailers or even a preview how it actually is going to play out and dialogue and the overall narrative. But yeah, that's been the overwhelming from what I've seen. I mean, to be fair, maybe they're getting feedback that I'm not seeing because I'm mostly paying attention to IGN.
Yeah, it's true.
And I haven't even, like, I don't remember when this we're watching right now, this look segment of gameplay came out, because I've barely seen gameplay. I've only seen that cinematic trailer. So this is interesting to see this now.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen this footage that we're looking at right now. I only remember that cinematic trailer from Gamescom.
Yeah.
Anyway. I hope the new Saints Row ends up being as fun as Saints Row the Third. Although it was interesting, around the time that this was announced, Justin, there was a piece, I think it was on Kotaku, the headline was something like, the new Saints Row proves something like, it's much harder for games to be silly now, today.
I was just going to say, they got to put some of their sillies in a sack.
Yeah, something like that.
Not all of them. Like the series at some point like went slightly too far. Like everybody loved it. And then they took it a step too far. Now they just got to pull it back 20%.
Yeah,
that'll be perfect.
Okay, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Adam did in Boston. And he says, I want to first say thank you to Tina for the Zookeeper World tips a few weeks ago. I've been making better progress since, and I'm still loving it. My question is,
you're welcome.
It's about mobile games. I remember when Justin joined IGN as an editor focused on mobile games. I had recently bought my first iPhone and I was enthralled by the possibilities. Each Christmas, IGN would put out a best mobile games list and I would buy all of them.
Oh, that's awesome.
All of it felt so exciting and filled with possibility. There are still tons of great games coming out on mobile, along with plenty of junk. But mobile games don't seem to get the same love these days from IGN or most gamers. Why do you think mobile games don't get as much love these days?
So from the editorial standpoint for us, it just doesn't, like, it's not the kind of thing that people are really like reading articles about. Even news stories, or like, I think occasionally if there's going to be a big, like back in the day, Pokemon Go events would be a big thing because it was signaling to the community, like, this is a big thing to look out for and you can participate in it. And here's how and when and why, but you don't get that level really all the time. So there's not a ton for us to cover that people want to read about, but that's just from, you know, a games media coverage kind of perspective. Mm-hmm. From a gamer perspective, I think if you like a lot of mobile games, especially the ones that are successful, tend to have a hook and maybe aren't the most fully fledged experiences. Now that's like very reductive because there are a lot of those out there on the platform. I think just the exposure that people get to most of them tend to be those hooky, like even Zookeeper World has like a primary hook, of course. Mm-hmm. So you either love that hook or you don't, and there's just a little bit like, you know, less to go off of, yeah, less to talk about in that sense.
Justin, what's your take on this?
Yeah, Tina touched on something important, which is, you know, a lot of mobile games that are free to play are very cheap, you know, a dollar or two, like the review, like we still review plenty of really high profile games that are important from, you know, an artistic or cultural perspective or have a big, you know, big brand attached to them. But people don't need, you know, games media in that same way necessarily when it comes to mobile games, where it's just right there on their phone. Download, like they can download it and check it out for themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, we learned a long time ago that just because there are millions and millions of people playing that game, that doesn't mean that there's an addressable audience of millions of people that we have something to service them with from, you know, a journalistic or, you know, creative standpoint. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I agree that mobile games don't get love. You know, we do a survey, as we've talked about on the show, of just habits around gaming and what platforms are you playing on, how much are you playing games, and IGN does this every other year. And you can chart like the rise of gaming and how many people play games on their phone over the 13 years that IGN's been doing this survey. And it keeps getting more and more and more prevalent and accepted. And I think a lot of people view mobile games as their second or third screen or their third home for video games at this point, in a way that like it was extremely shunned. You know, when I was the mobile games editor, for example, like it never bothered me because I knew the games were dope, but like there were a lot of people that were really, really resistant to gaming on mobile that like, I don't know, like I don't, like kids all play Fortnite on their phone, right? Like I just, I don't sense that anymore, except from sort of curmudgeonly olds.
Yeah. It is.
I've always like, I've sensed like just in, you know, communities that there's also a backlash against mobile, specifically when it's like, this series is going to mobile and it's always on, that's only going to be on mobile. That happened with Diablo, right? Mm. And then Wipeout, I think, was a series that like had like a mobile game, and it's like, you know, people get really mad about that. They're like, they don't want their mainline, you know, games to end up on mobile. So that's like the most negative I see. And then the rest is like, I feel like a lot of people just have like the game that's on their phone at any given time, you know, and so like it's become a different classification of gaming, you know.
Yeah
The business model. The games are great, and the games have always been great. And then, you know, anyone that didn't think so was missing out. That was their own sort of bias getting the better of them. But the business model, you know, with the rise of free-to-play games and gacha games and a lot of really gross predatory stuff on mobile, you know, gambling and kids games, and it's trash. Like, it's trash. There's no defending it. It's being legislated against, you know, all around the world. Like, that's how kind of nasty this stuff can be. And so two things. One, like that's the root cause of when people are picturing mobile games in their head. They're picturing free-to-play garbage and predatory garbage like that.
Or bad controls. That's like still a thing too, where it's like just that, like, you know, if a series is famous like Castlevania for having like really good D-pad controls, like you should be able to play it on a controller. And, you know, that's more and more obviously possible now to hook up a controller, Bluetooth controller or whatever to your phone.
Yeah. I never liked the criticism of like, oh, well, phones weren't made for games. And it was like, well, neither a keyboard and mouse. Nobody can play.
I know. Some of the greatest games ever are touchscreen based. Just you have to make the games for them.
Exactly. You have to make the games natively for the platform that they're on. But Zookeeper World, the game that everyone on this show is hooked on, is an Apple Arcade game. And like Apple Arcade is the greatest thing. It's the greatest invention. $5 a month, and there's new games every week, and they have absolutely no ads, and they have absolutely no in-app purchases. And so it's so rekindled my personal love of mobile games. And they're not all hits, they're not all good, but they're included with your subscription, and actually the hit to miss ratio is fantastic.
Yeah. Sam, there's some kind of new Galaga game on there that just came out.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From Namco?
Well, I assume.
Yeah, that's neat.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like it's been a while now since there's been a big mobile game that was like a big phenomenon. You know, like, so like something that's like Angry Birds or Flappy Bird or Pokemon Go, or even like,
I think it, like, is Fortnite.
Even like Candy Crush, Game of War, and then Clash of Clans. I feel like it's been a while since there's been a game that's like that I've heard of. Well,
yeah, I think the exceptions now are, like, to the Fortnite point, the exceptions now are, like, the games that are also available on mobile that people gravitate towards, like Genshin Impact and Fortnite being, like, pretty prominent examples.
Yeah.
Genshin is the one I was going to name drop. Like, I think developers have kind of wised up, and there's not very many that are exclusive to that platform anymore.
Yeah, when you know, way to tell this is, like, when you're watching, like, a TV show and they have, like, the kid playing on their phone the whole time. It's like, what is that kid playing? If they mention it, like right now, it's usually Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Which is always 6 months behind.
Zookeeper World, puzzle game of the year. Justin,
new levels.
I know there are new levels. Justin, are you watching the Great British Baking Show?
Yes. Yeah. Dude, yep. Jürgen, he's destroying everybody.
I know. It's the German Jürgen. Well, but Giuseppe, the Italian Giuseppe, is also very good.
The two of them are shoo-ins for the final. And then yeah. I love Chiggs and Christelle both so much that I'm dreading this week when one of them has to go home.
Yeah, yeah. Both of those are great. It's been a really good season.
I think it's going to go down as the best season.
Wow, that's good. Tina, Sam. Sam's probably not watching the show, but Tina?
No.
Too many cards.
You say too many cards? There are no cards.
Yeah, what?
Just presume it because you guys like it so much.
There's a baking show on Netflix that I put on as a background thing. It's like, I think it's called Impossible Baking, and they call it Baconeering. They pair an engineer with a baker, and then they have to create these structures that are mechanically involved but also still edible. It's a whole thing. So I've been watching that relevantly.
Okay. Well, there's many episodes, many seasons of the Great British Baking Show on Netflix. Yeah. I'm greatly enjoying this latest one.
I like Noel Fielding from Mighty Boosh a lot.
I like him a lot too. And I'm so like, it's like, he seems like such a weird fit for a host for this show, but I'm so glad that he's there.
He gets better as he goes. I Matt Lucas though. No, thank you.
He's the other current one, the bald one. I like him too. Yeah. I think he's funny. I think he's funny too.
I don't know.
I've liked all the hosts, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just glad. I imagine Noel weirds out a lot of people who just watch that show and aren't familiar with his work, and I love it.
His favorite thing, Sam, you would love it, is he openly and actively knows absolutely nothing about baking at all. And like, he references it all the time in the show. He's like, I don't know what you're doing or what's going on or what any of the stuff I just said means, but good luck. Go bake it.
It's great.
It's really
so positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cute.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Dennis of Denmark. Den.
Did he call himself Dennis of Denmark?
He did. I'm Dennis of Denmark. Hail and well met.
Yes.
Let the questioning begin.
I'm trying to think of a cute intro.
I know. Well, how's this? It's still Thanksgiving season, so is this a turkey?
No, see, hold on, Damon. I was going to say, is there cooking involved in this game? Still super limiting, but relevant.
To two topics we just talked about, Thanksgiving and baking.
That's true. Should we go with that one? Because I don't know what yours was.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Hold on. Let's find out.
I guess we could have gone with like, is there eating like as part of gameplay?
This
instead game, of cooking.
In this game, I don't think so. I'm gonna say no in this game.
No cooking. Okay.
It wasn't it wasn't a quick no though.
Yeah, exactly. So it could still be like an RPG.
Yeah, well, it's probably like Chrono Trigger or something where it's like cooking things in that game.
or just eating. Yeah.
Does mom cook you breakfast when she wakes you up?
In the game?
That's a Chrono Trigger joke that I clearly am in the wrong room for.
No, I was just waiting to see if you were asking that seriously or not.
Yeah. Is this a role playing game?
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. Knew it.
There it is.
If it's Chrono Trigger, that'd be just super weird.
Was it made in Japan?
Yes.
Does this game have like sprites? Are the characters sprites in this game?
Mm-hmm. No.
Polygons. Or the weird like balls, like Vector Man. Remember when games had those weird 3D balls for a hot second? There was that fighting game. It's called Orbs or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Balls. Mm-hmm.
Is this made in Japan?
I already asked that. He said yes.
Okay. Let's see. Did
this game originally release during the PS1 or N64 generation?
No. That's five.
Does it have a lot of sequels?
Yes.
Is it nice. Turn-based?
No.
Is it, well, okay, it's probably Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy. I mean, I don't know. I guess there's lots of long-running. Did Square Enix make this game? Or it's Square or Enix before they merged together?
Did Square or Enix?
Or Square,
Square Enix. And or Enix. Square yeah. And or Enix make this game.
Did Square and or Enix make this game? Yes.
Or Square Enix.
Yes.
I mean, is it a Final Fantasy game?
No.
Shit. Shoot. Mm. Is it a Dragon Quest game?
No. That's
no. So what? Okay. So Chrono Cross. But that doesn't have a million sequels.
Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts, Star Ocean.
Is there a Disney association with this franchise?
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
Which Kingdom Hearts is it? Polygon, yeah. So it's not the DS
I guess,
one.
Yeah.
I don't know these games.
I mean, I guess we can narrow down by year or platform and then guess which one it would have been.
I think we can get it through that. Oh, well, first of all, I was curious. Is this one of the numbered mainline Kingdom Hearts games?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it the first of its name?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Go for it, Sam.
Is this the Kingdom of Hearts?
It is. It is Kingdom Hearts. The first one, 2002. Which I think has only ever been released on PlayStation 2.
Wow, this does not look how I remember it.
Yeah. Well,
I wonder if this game's been remade twice.
Probably with a different name, you know, Dreams Under Sleep 358 divided by 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sounds it.
Yeah. Have we ever gotten a serious answer, like a non-jokey answer for why they're named that way?
I'm sure if you play the game from start to finish, you'll totally understand.
Right, yeah.
Kingdom Hearts Kingdom Hearts fans could probably explain it to us.
I mean, I feel like even the fans goof on it, but I want to know like the actual reason. I'll ask Jonathan.
I can't even explain why Donald Duck doesn't wear pants, so I'm not the one to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Please, sir. In a world where clothes are thing.
I've never played these games, but I think there's a cooking mini game in Kingdom Hearts 3, mm-hmm. not the first.
Yeah, we were onto something there.
Forgot about the cooking question.
Thank you for the suggestion, Dennis of Denmark. That's a good one. Viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. That's not all the 20 questions for us this week, because tomorrow we're recording a whole 100 questions episode for you to go up over Thanksgiving weekend, because next week is Thanksgiving holiday for us here in the US. So we'll be taking some time off for some rest and relaxation, but we'll still have an episode for you next week. So please be excited for that. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Tim Ryan, working behind the scenes, making this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Good morning, Sacramento. You sound so far away. You should have seen it coming. You found out yesterday.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.